I didn't know all that, but so I went back the following year. Went back the following year, and so the other thing I did is I got the Easy Rider biker magazine or something. I ordered these biker boots off of there, and I got a leather vest and a chain wallet, and I went back and I started. I was a pothead, and I was, you know, and I was stealing it, and all of a sudden everybody liked me, and I learned that I could be somebody besides Mike, and people would accept me and love me, you know, because the Mike that was before that, like, got picked on and all this other stuff.
I got a little assembly.
And, like, I didn't know that then, but, you know, so that carried me on. So, like, I became what anybody wanted me to be for them to like me. Like, I was going to any kind of party, any kind of get-together. Like, I wanted to be in the middle of it. I wanted to be a life of it. And, you know, and I can't think of the word, but that just meant that, like, I had to have the best stuff, and I had to use, you know, I was always getting high, and it just turned into anything. Like, I was willing to do anything, like, you know, like, just everything snowballed, alcohol, cocaine, smoking cigarettes, all that stuff, to feel cool, and really it was like to be okay with me. And what I didn't know was is that the whole time I was really wanting people to love me. And now I came from, my parents were married 50 some years and my mom passed away, so I didn't come from a broken home. Now I don't know where that came from, it was born into me or whatever, but you know, and the end result, that was it. And today, like, I've done the work to really I can recognize when I'm starting to go down that path of, like, wanting somebody to like me or wanting to be accepted by somebody. Like, all I can recognize it now, and that's because I've done the step work to recognize it. And you know, when I first came in to Narcotics Anonymous, it was in the late 80s, and I came in, I went up and got a key tag. Another reason I got a key tag, because this pretty blonde girl was giving them out, and I got a hug, so I was like, man, I got close to that girl, so I could get a hug. And, you know, and I stayed clean maybe 30 days, if that, and got out of trouble, and, you know, where I was working and everything, I soon picked back up, was off to the races again, and just the whole thing, and ended up dealing cocaine and doing all these crazy things that I just would have never done offhand, you know. And got in trouble again, went back, and the whole time, I will say this, you know, my mom, who was my number one enabler, was very codependent with her, and she would, she knew something was going on early on, and she was like, you need to go and see a psychiatrist. And, like, I went to a psychiatrist, and I think I was 14 or 15, and the guy asked me, he thought, because I was honest with him, and he said, do you think smoking pot is part of the problem? And I told him that's the solution to the problem, you know, early on, looking back. And, I didn't put all that together, but, you know, and I ended up going to, I don't know how many Epic House counseling centers to get out of trouble, you know, when I was a teenager, group therapy sessions, you know. My mom always said, you got something going on with you. Like, she didn't, you know, and she was telling me that, and I guess she learned that from her mom probably. And, you know, and I just wanted to be left alone. I wanted to be loved by everybody, you know, and I was doing all these crazy things. And, you know, and later on in life, I ended up getting a major consequences, you know, not legally, but, like, you know, with losing where I was at in life. And I ended up having two kids with my first wife, and I ended up, what do you call it? I was using, and one day, like, I had been in and out trying to stay clean in 1990, ended up in a rehab, and it was, I had run out of everything I had. I had burned all my bridges, and I called the last guy. I mean, I'm nervous. And the last guy that was like my friend that tried to help me, and I was like, I ran out of gas. I'm on 695. I had just been gone. I had a work truck that I worked for my parents. They had a small landscape business. And I would take it and I would run the streets of Baltimore for like weeks on one end for all these dealers, driving them wherever they want for one more hit. I mean, I ended up washing their dishes. That's what whatever they needed, I was doing it to get one more. That's where I was at. And I ran, and a dealer, it must be guys, a dealer, he liked me and he said, "You need to go home." He said, "I'm sure your parents are worried to death about you." So the guy sent me home, and I wasn't going home. I was like, "I'm going to find another guy," But I ran out of gas. I had no, and any money I had, I had misplaced it or probably spent it. And I called my friend, and he said, "I'm going to come get you. I'm bringing your father. I'm bringing my girlfriend." And his girlfriend had her ex-boyfriend, who was happened to be the guy that I ended up, his sisters all dealt pot with. Like, he ended up in a rehab. I didn't know none of that. And she had a number to this place, so like I called there. He brought my father, and I got that number, so I went back, and I called this place, and and they said, "It'll be a week, we'll have a bed." And, I was like, I wanted to go, but not because I was, at the end of my using, because I wanted to get out of people, out of trouble with my parents and everybody else. And so I ended up calling back and begging them, and somebody must have left. And the next day I was going, so then I had a friend come by and drop off some pot, because he said you can't go to rehab without pot. And so I took pot with me. It was my first time, and I hadn't really been to NA that much. Like, the only experience I had was like that 30 days. I sure wasn't listening. And so in the middle of the night, I got high a couple times in the rehab. I never got caught. But something started to happen was I realized that I wasn't getting anywhere. And ended up flushing it down the toilet and trying it. So some kind of seed got planted. And at that time, the rehab was in Westminster, and there was like very few NA meetings. There was one that was brought in there by this guy, Glenn, and this other guy, Adam. And they brought the meeting in once a week. And like, I identify with them guys, and the other meetings were AA meetings, and they would take in a van out to these meetings, and in the other fellowship, and and that's what they promoted, because that's what they said at the time, that's where people were staying clean. And most of the people that were running the rehab at the time were from AA, so like they would take me there, and like I started going there. And I learned by going there, part of my story is I learned that what an addict I really am. There's a difference between alcoholics and addicts, and I can't explain it other, it's, so I ended up going there, and I couldn't stay clean. Like, I stayed clean for 6 months. Never made it to a year. I did work steps with a sponsor. I got a sponsor and work steps, and we got up to step 8, and we did it within like 4 months, all verbally. I did write a 4-step, and we went over it, and I ended up on step 8. I had no business being there looking back. And, I ended up using, because I got on step 8, and I immediately wanted to go make amends to the guys, that I used to use with. And that didn't work too well, so, I ended up using again. A year later, I ended up back in the same rehab, and the guy that was running the place, they put you in a hot seat in the middle of the room, which I feel like I'm in right now. He said, "I don't know what you're smiling for," because I would laugh, because that was my protection. And he said, "You already have all the tools you'll ever need to stay clean." And I didn't know what he meant. What he meant was the 12 steps. I know that now. But like, he was like, "You got all these tools. You just need to use them." And and it went by, and so like I left out of there. I tried to stay clean in other fellowships, sporadic NA meetings, because there wasn't a lot there, and most of the people that I was hanging with were in that fellowship. And and ended up being where, ended up being a secretary of a meeting, and like the treasurer would never come by, so ended up having a lot of money, ended up having like $300 this one time, and I ended up using. So now I'm secretary in this AA meeting high on crack every week, and and that's part of the story. Like, they first couple weeks I got away with it, but the third or fourth week they came and they said, a couple of them pulled me aside, said, we know that you're not clean, and we know we can't help you with your drug problem, but we're here to help. They gave me their phone numbers, and they tried to help me. They really did. They cared for me the best they could. But what happened was, I ended up needing to go to Narcotics Anonymous. I finally got here, I identified here, and I felt a part of, and I felt like I was wanted and needed here, and so it just kind of fit. But before I even got to that road, like, I left out of there, and like, so then I didn't go to meetings for a while. I tried to stay clean just by not using. That didn't work. I went and did a couple different programs. I did the Terrence Gorski relapse prevention workbook, you know, with index cards, all my relapse trigger. I tried all these things, and you know, I went to all these things, and they would say, you're the one who's going to make it out of everybody there, you know, and I was always the first one to use, you know, and so I was doing this relapse trigger project, and I ended up going there four times a week, and this one guy had a big lifted Jeep, and he was going to NA meetings, and he said, come on, we would go out every Friday night, and we would get in his Jeep, and we would still go clean crazy stuff and go four-wheeling and do crazy stuff. And one time he said, we're going to go down and get sushi, and I never had sushi in my life. And he said, we're going to go downtown, and he's parked somewhere, and we walked. I'm just following him around like a puppy dog. And he took me into the convention center, ended up being the World Convention of Narcotics Anonymous in Baltimore. It was 1994. And when I walked in there, I met two people. My first sponsor, that guy who asked me to, who brought meetings into the rehab, his name was Glenn. He's still clean today, lives in Texas. And the other guy was this guy, Timmy G, who I used to see at all the parties I used to go to, and he was always using somewhere in the bathroom, high on Dilaudid or something. And he was clean, and he became my first sponsor. And so, like, that started happening. And so then it was still a rough road. So, like, I stayed clean for a little while. I ended up coming to meetings and say, I'm just going to stick and stay until people know who I am. They're going to have to deal with me. So I would stay at the meeting. And, of course, the girl who was wearing short shorts and a tank top, who was looking for love on her own, or looking for a man, you know, got attracted to her. So next thing, you know, I moved in with her, my two kids, her two kids, and we all lived in her house, and it was just a freaking wreck. Neither one of us were working any steps, and it was just a disaster. I mean, we were going to NA meetings and everything still, but I was still looking for love in the wrong place. And you know, and I didn't know how to deal with another person in a relationship because I hadn't done any work on Mike, so I didn't know. And I ended up using again in this relationship. She ended up in the hospital, and I left the hospital, and because I couldn't deal with all of it, and I went out to do one, you know, and one, you know, with 17 months clean, one turned into, you know, I couldn't stop again. And this time the police stopped me. And when they stopped me, I was driving, this is my story, I was driving the van, and I had any stickers all over the van, I had any t-shirt on, I had my basic text, I was cutting crack up on my basic text in the middle, picked a girl up, and you know, and the police pulled me over. They knew the girl. They told her to walk down the street by name, first name. The guy looked at me, and I think he saw the NA stuff. You know, or it was God. He said, "I don't know what's going on. You need to get the hell out of here and never come back." And I realized right away there was a power greater than me intervening. I had been coming around long enough, so I ran back home, and you know, and like, it wasn't working with her, and so I moved out, moved back to my parents' house. Thank God that they let me back in. I took my kids, packed all my stuff in trash bags, moved it all back, and I called my sponsor at the time, this guy Mike, and he helped me get clean again. And he was like, "We really need to work steps." He said, "Yeah, no business being in a relationship. That's the other reason I left, because I didn't." He said, "You don't know who Mike is, and you never will till you do some step work." And so I started doing step work, and I got to step two with him. And this guy, like, he saved me so many times. Like, I got to his house, and he was doing some things that I didn't agree with. He had an illegal cable box, and he was doing some shady things with his business, and it made me uncomfortable. And I left out of his house that night after doing a second step and saying, "Okay, God, I don't know who or what you are, but I'm very uncomfortable right now because I don't want to be like that. That's the guy I used to be, stealing, thieving, lying, cheating." And I didn't know what to do. I just prayed on the way home. And it's funny because God answers prayers when you really didn't expect. Like, I prayed on the way home, and like a week later, he calls me and says he's moving to South Carolina with this girl. And he says, giving me suggestions for a new sponsor. And like, he's talking, and all I kept thinking was, "Wow, that was quick." and it was. You know, and I started my journey, and I ended up going to my other friend who is no longer here right now, and he suggested going to this men's retreat, and he said it's full of NA people, but it's not an NA retreat. I said, "Okay, I'm willing to do anything, you know, I'm seeking a higher power." So I went to this retreat, and there was 30-some men there, and I had never been on nothing like that, and these guys all had something that I knew I was missing, and that was a relationship with God. And I could clearly see it, and they all had clean time, and the clean time they had back then was about, I think, was like 10, 12 years, and that was a lot. And so I went to the guy that put the retreat on. His name is Mark, and I said, "How do I get this relationship that you guys have?" And he said, I said, like, "I'm not a Christian guy. I don't know about all that." And he said, "All you got to do is go and find the right time, is ask God to reveal himself in power and light in your life and show you who he is." I said, "Okay, that sounds simple enough." So I went, it was like the next day, bought this big tree at this place. It was a Trinitarian monastery. And by the way, the monastery we were at, I used to pull up in there and smoke crack all the time. So it was like, here I am. This is like, you know, man, it's just like one hand and one hand. And so I prayed. I said, "I don't know who or what you are, but I said, I need you in my life, and I can't live that way anymore." So I started going to meetings, and every meeting I would go to, people started just coming up to me and talking to me about God. I mean, I didn't even know who they were. They were talking to me about higher powers and all these things. I was like, wow. And, you know, I started going to his house. He had a Bible study in his house. So I started going there on a weekly basis. And, you know, and I ended up asking God to come into my life. I asked him to be my sponsor. And he sponsored me for the next 6 years. And I started doing step work. I got up to step eight and stopped. And so I stopped. And other thing too is, like, I stayed out of relationship for like 3 years. I didn't go out with women, really, only women friends. I didn't make sexual innuendos. I didn't try to have sex with any of them. All those things, like, I made a vow I wasn't going to do all that because I wanted to find out who Mike was. And what it did was, I ended up having some relationships with some women in the program that are still my friends today. Like, I became a trustworthy man. And, like, I never saw that coming. But, you know, that's where God had put me. And so I went through that. And then I met a friend of mine who was coming around, another friend in recovery. And one night she was going through some stuff, and we sat down, and we discovered that we really liked each other. So, you know what that meant. Like, we had to get in a relationship because we really liked each other. So we started dating, kind of. And you know, and then the dating started, and the next thing, like, what Mike knows is that we're going to have to move in together, and we're going to have to get married, right? And she was moving into a place, and, like, she had ended up having 2 years clean, I had 6 years clean, and we ended up moving in together, and, man, it was not the right thing to do. My sponsor came to me. I'd stopped working steps, and my sponsor came to me, and Mark says, "What the hell are you doing? It's not what you... This isn't God's plan. This is Mike's plan." And I said, no, this is God's plan. And he said, "No, Mike's taking over." He said, "You're going to end up using again." And I laughed at him and told him, "Yeah, you know what you're talking about. We got it." One that ended up happening was that I ended up using again. I was 6 years clean. Because I got angry with God. Also, like, we were living together, and she had done her own relapsing with pills, and I wanted it all to end. I just wanted her out of my head. So, you know, and I had stopped doing the step work, so I went back to what I knew to get somebody out of my head, and that was to go get high. And so I went and did one. And I used, it was on during the convention, the Free State convention. It was down in the Inner Harbor at the time, I think it was. It was the time of the Nextel phones. I had my Nextel on. All my NA friends are texting me. They all know where I'm at. And the worst thing is when you hear, you know, the Nextel, it would just blurt out people talking. I'm like, "We know what you're doing." I had to leave it on because I wanted people to love me at the same time. It was just messed up. So I ended up using it. It was Black Friday. It was the worst time to ever use, you know. And because, like, everybody's going out on the road early in the morning. So you can't drive around expecting not to run into somebody. I ended up along the river somewhere. And I used everything I had, and then I heard this voice come in and start talking to me. And I thought there was somebody walking down the road. I thought that, I was hallucinating, but that voice was God. And his voice said something very clear to me. He kept saying, "Mike, are you done doing it your way? Aren't you tired of doing it your way? Maybe it's time to start doing it my way." And I was like, "Wow. Where did that come from?" And so I left, went back to the apartment we shared, called her, told her that we had views, and she was pretty dope. She was out shopping, and, you know, in Jersey or something. And other thing is, I got on my knees and I said, I begged God. I came to a point where I had to make a decision. Am I going to keep on going and start trading stuff? Am I just going to go down this path like I've always gone and ruin everything that I've even gotten this far? Or am I going to surrender? And I got on my knees crying like a baby and I begged God to please take all of it. I said, "Take her, take the vehicles, whatever you got to do to get it all out of the way, do it, because I don't want to live that way anymore." And so the next thing I know, like, and here's the thing, we were trying to get married. Like, we were trying to make a way to get married. So so that happened on December, what happened like a couple of days after Thanksgiving. And then the other thing that happened is my mom, who's my number one in the area, gave me a bunch of Tylenol 3s because I was shaking after using. So I used them till December 8th when my significant other, Carla, who was, today she's my wife, and she came and was like, "Let's, how many pills you got left?" And I was like, I don't know, whatever, one, two, and said, "Let's flush them and go get a one-day key tag." I said, "Okay, let's do it." So we flushed them, and we got a one-day key tag, because she has her own story, and she had relapsed on pain pills. And I didn't realize that, but, you know, and here, so, like, all of a sudden now, like, we have the same clean date. So we went to this little meeting, candlelight meeting, where nobody was at, and we got one-day key tags, and, and then it was, it was December 8th. On December 21st, we were married in our apartment by our pastor friend. He knew everything about us and everything that was going on, and so we got married, and all of a sudden, like, everything became right. I got a new sponsor because, you know, Mark is suggesting maybe we need to get a new one because we had reached a little problem because I didn't listen to him. And So I got, you know, God provides teachers when you need them. So I got this new sponsor, this black guy named Calvin, and he was just like me. He was looking for love in all the wrong places, and he did all the work that he needed to do to work on himself. And was like, wow, we were like kindred spirits, and like we meshed. And the thing that he had me do was he had me do work on a book that's outside NA. It's called Codependent No More. And I looked at that, man, and it freed me up because I started seeing how dependent I was on everybody else, about how I felt, and all these things. And I was like, wow. Man, it was like an explosion moment. So then we started doing step work, and got to a point until like he wasn't available no more. He got in his own stuff, and like I got stuck. I needed another. I was like, man, it took me 2 years before I ended up changing, getting a new sponsor. So I got a new sponsor. I prayed and asked God to reel a new sponsor to me, and he did. And this guy, Jerry, and he sponsored me for the next 7 years. And I did work, and I got all through all the steps, and got back on step one. Actually, I was back on step three, and it was like a month ago, and my sponsor of 21 years decided to pick up and use. And that was devastating to me, because I love this guy. I still do. And it was like, wow, just like that. And it was a wake-up call for me, you know. And like all the guys I sponsored, I had no qualms texting each one of them and was like, you know what, my sponsor used with 21 years clean. What are you doing for your recovery today? Where are you with your step work? This is like a wake-up call. Like, what's going on? Like, it's a wake-up call for me. And man, and it was hard. But that night, like, he called to tell me himself, and by the end of that night, I was on the phone because I was going to have a new sponsor. I wasn't going another day without a sponsor. And it's funny because I ended up calling a few people. I ended up calling Mark, and Mark's my sponsor again. Here it is, 18 years later, I got the same sponsor. And it just worked out. We have a relationship. And I had a couple minutes left, but, you know, today I know without a doubt that I'm an addict, because just my story is crazy. Like, I've got key tags hanging on my wall. They're as tall as me, and it has 1 day, 30 days, 90 days, just, you know, 18 month stip almost, and then a year, 6 months, and then, you know, and now what I got now, and it's hangs on my wall, and it's a very good reminder. And I don't ever forget that I'm an addict, because, and even today, I still have to do work on me to know that when something starts to feel good, or if I start obsessing on something, that I need to take a look at it, because you know, I could be off to the races again and wanting to feel good and wanting somebody to love me, you know. And that's just how my story has gone. And thanks for letting me share.